Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron enters the world of escape rooms. We'll hear from a local escape room proprietor about what makes being trapped in a room with your friends or family so appealing. Dave also concocted an audio escape room for his guest, and you can play along as well. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with a pastel artist who found how art and community have helped her navigate physical and mental health challenges. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we'll be using all of our wits, composure, and sleuthing skills for the world of escape rooms. Maybe you've done an escape room yourself, or maybe you've just heard of them, and if you've never heard of them, then you're in for a treat today, because not only will I be speaking with the founder of Escape Alaska, we'll be taking you, the listener, into an audio escape room where you can join the fun from the comfort of your car or your home. And in the studio with me now is the before-mentioned founder of Escape Alaska, Dawson McKay. Dawson, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thanks for having me in, man.
It's great to have you. I've been wanting to do an escape room show for a while, so I'm really looking forward to this one. So much to talk about today, but if we could just start like really basic for anyone that's thinking out there, like, what is an escape room? I have no idea what they're talking about. Can you explain how it works?
Yeah, that was really tough for me. My son found them first, and he lived in Albuquerque at the time, and he just called me and said, "Dad, I found these things that I've been doing with my friends. They're escape rooms." And he tried to explain it to me, and I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, so it's a themed room, like the decorations on the wall, and then there's like puzzles on a table. What are, he's like, "No, you don't get it." And so then I went to visit, and we played some escape rooms together, and I said, "Oh, I get it." So the concept of an escape room, especially ours, is that you are immersed in a story. So there's a premise, like in The Tomb, for example. You and your group are going into this Egyptian tomb, and why might you be there? So there's a premise video that says, here's the story, the setup. And then when you walk into the room, it's like an Egyptian tomb.
Right.
And so it's not like, you know, there's a Rubik's cube on the table. All of the puzzles are diegetic. Everything fits within the story and fits within the room. To the extent that we've even had some people say, "Yeah, we've played escape rooms all over, but your puzzles are just so like in world that we didn't know where to start." Like, we didn't, because we just walk in and it's just a tomb. What do I do?
Right.
So that, and that's kind of the point, is that the narrative is that you have 60 minutes to escape. There's some sort of event that's caused you to be trapped in this space, and
right,
you have to escape by solving all of the puzzles in the room. And that was basically it. So we traveled around and we played a lot of escape rooms and just kind of got a feel for the wide range of, you know, what people are doing. But that's the basic concept, is you're playing. It's almost like you're living a scene in a movie.
Right.
And totally. You go into the story and you solve your way out.
Yeah. It is really hard to wrap your mind around it the first time you hear of it. You're like, I pay someone to lock me in a room for 60 minutes and put me in a kind of stress situation.
I didn't know this was something I wanted.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, it is really fun. I have done one of your escape rooms. I've done one of the ones in downtown Anchorage there, mm-hmm. Alaska escape rooms. Really enjoyed them both. I also really enjoyed reading your bio there, Dawson. You've listed there on your bio, magician, actor, filmmaker. I understand you're no stranger to radio either.
We
were just talking about. So tell me about your journey and what's brought you to this point today where you're now making escape rooms in Alaska.
Well, yeah, I always had an affinity for entertainment, not just, I mean, everybody likes to be entertained, right? Mm-hmm. But I would watch like early Henson stuff, and I didn't want to just watch the Muppet Show. I absorbed all of the behind the scenes stuff. So I like really went into that world. I want to know how you built the sets. I want to know how you block a scene, you know, with guys with foam on the end of their arms yeah. for hours on end. So I just became like a self-appointed student of the craft of, and, you know, Muppets is a good example. It's just one, but it covers a wide range of, performance, some which translates to stage, filmmaking, lighting, audio, sound effects, like the whole gamut. So I was always wanting to find a place where I could be creative. Like, you know, it's like, where's my clay? What is it that I'm going to work with? And for a long time, that was radio, but kind of by default.
Yeah.
And radio's fun. You know, it's theater of the mind, and you get to bring people along and paint pictures and tell stories. And that was all, it was all fun. But I had these, I remember when I was in middle school at Wendler, me and my best friend had like super 8mm film cameras, and we just wanted to be filmmakers. We wanted to be George Lucas. So we were always like building models and then putting the cameras down on the ground and blowing up the models. And the films were just awful. It was just terrible, but it was fun. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the world we lived in. So I was always looking for that outlet, and it was kind of weird. I was living in Albuquerque at the time, went to get my hair cut by this wonderful woman named Helena, and I saw her and chatted with her all the time. And her husband, Mike, was always in the salon in the back, fixing stuff, working on things, making her salon look beautiful. And one year it was about Halloween, and we started talking about decorating for Halloween. I was like, yeah, I always go over the top. And I'm the guy who, you know, like as you approach the house, there's like green lights, and then you open the door and fog billows out and that sort of stuff. And she said, you and my husband need to get together and build a haunted house, because he is the same way. And I had never in my life even considered building a haunted house, but just her saying that put it in my mind. So I started developing, because I knew I was, at that time, I was working to come back up here because this is where I'm from and I missed home. So I was like, well, this would be a really cool thing for Anchorage, is to have an actual theme park quality haunted house, because we've never really had anything like that on an ongoing basis. So I started developing that. And that was when my son found escape rooms and said, hey, you need to check this out. And they're very, escape rooms and haunted houses are like the makers for them, is the conventions are all the same.
Yeah,
they, really, they a share a lot of DNA. Yeah.
Totally.
So we decided that it would be fun to switch gears for a little while. We're still developing the haunted house. It's just coming a little slower. But we decided to switch gears because this would be something that we could do year round, which kind of keeps your hands in the clay, which is fun.
Totally. I love that. I love that imagery. Well, you also referenced something else in your bio that I found really interesting about studying just human behavior and psychology in general, and how people like Walt Disney perfected that experience, that immersive experience walking through a space, you know, at like Disneyland. So what have you been able to learn about the way a place like Disneyland is built and apply that to your escape rooms when it comes to like human psychology?
One of my favorite Disney stories was, I think it was the Tiki Room that was being developed, and his Imagineers came to him and said, hey, we think we've got it all figured out. All the birds are ready to go. We want you to come watch it. And he came and, you know, watched the show. And then when it was over, he looked at it and he was like, it was good, but why aren't the birds breathing? and they were like, what? The birds breathe? What? They sing, they flap their wings, they, you know, they open their beaks, they turn their heads, they do all this stuff. Nobody's going to notice them breathing. And Walt said, people don't always notice perfection, but they feel it.
Mm, yeah.
And that's been kind of a guiding principle for us. There's been a couple of statements from various inspirations over the years. That's one of them. Another one was actually Paul Stanley from Kiss, who famously repeatedly says when they started developing their band, they wanted to build the show that they wanted to see that no one else was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we found when we started playing escape rooms everywhere, is that there was always something, like they'd have a fairly well-themed room, but then they had just regular drop ceiling overhead. And I'm like, okay, that kind of takes me out of the Old West office when I look up and there's just, you know, modernity everywhere. And so that was something I learned, is like every little piece may not be a thing that people will notice, but they'll feel that you've put that much work into all of it. So, yeah, that was sort of the Disney thing. And then we've noticed, my son and I are both very attentive to patterns and behaviors and things like that. And so when you watch thousands and thousands of escape room groups play the same game thousands and thousands of times, you do start to see a lot of patterns and some really interesting, weird stuff that people do from one room to the other, you know, because they'll go into one room and, like, the same group, they'll go into one room and they'll behave a certain way with a lock. And then they'll go into the other room and they'll behave entirely differently with the exact same kind of lock. And it's, you know, a lot of it is just it's environment, it's story, it's there's a lot of just pressures of how you feel in the space. We found out with our noir game that people will solve a particular puzzle much more easily and much more often if we just put the pieces in a different place. And not that the pieces are easier to find. They find them in both scenarios. But in one instance, honestly, it's just how high we've placed them. One of them is at waist height. One of them is at knee height. And at knee height, people tend to solve the puzzle more often. It's crazy.
Oh, the lower. Huh?
Yeah. It's crazy to look at stuff like that. And then you can hypothesize all day long. It's like, why is this happening? And that's the sort of stuff that we look for, is how can we kind of fine tune the space so that it's interesting, it's fun, keeps you in world, and gives you the best chance to solve it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the solving part of these rooms. Designing them seems like so much fun, like the theme, coming up with the theme. It also seems like a ton of work, but what is the process like when you're coming up with these puzzles that people have to solve? You want to make them not too hard, not too easy. It needs to be just that perfect sweet spot of difficulty, right?
Yeah. And you don't have any idea what that is until you open the room. No clue. Because so our tomb game has a 69% success rate. Okay. Noir has a 51% success rate. When we were designing Noir, we were intentionally designing it to be a little easier than the tomb. We missed. And that's simply because there are some things, like, objectively, Noir is not that much harder. There's one puzzle in there that is objectively harder than anything in the tomb. But the rest of the room, it's just the narrative force that causes people to behave a certain way. People have a tendency to try to guess a lot more in Noir for some reason. So, the design is just, it's just best guess. You can look at it and try to, and I'm hoping that we do, you know, because we're working our third room now, I'm hoping that with time, we do get a little better at anticipating what people are going to do. But again, the third room is an entirely different narrative. It's an entirely different scene and scenic and set inside. So it's just kind of, it's hard to know what's gonna happen when you put people in there. But we do have there's a skeletal process of, you know, here's how many puzzles roughly we need to have in the room for the average group to, and we have a good solve time in our other rooms. Like of the successful groups, they're getting out at about 54 to 56 minutes, which is just about perfect.
Yeah, that's right? What you want, right?
It's down to the last minute.
Stress.
It's like in the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you want it to be. And then there are some groups who have played just, hundreds of escape rooms, and they come through and do it in 20 minutes, and they're like, what? That was it?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I'm sorry, dude. You're just really good. But the average group doesn't take that long. So we have some processes, some questions that we have to ask ourselves as we go along to make sure that every puzzle is solvable, every puzzle makes sense, every puzzle is, like, we don't want leaps of logic. You know, you have to be able to And some people will ask before we go in there, do you have any tips? It's like, yeah, don't try to guess stuff. If if someone were to come up to you at any point and say, why are you doing that thing that you're doing right now? You should be able to point to something in the room that definitively said, this is what you should be doing. If you can't do that, you're just guessing. And right. guessing is a giant waste of time.
Yeah. So what would you say the age range is for these rooms? Is there, like, what is the youngest you would suggest trying out these rooms?
I mean, we have all ages, obviously. We do a lot of birthday parties for younger people. Probably for the kids to be able to realistically do the room with help, and everybody should be willing to ask for help. That's the first thing. Fewer than 4% of groups can finish one of our rooms with no help.
Right. So there's an outlet for people always to somehow receive a tip from you there in headquarters.
Always.
Okay. Yeah.
Always to get a hint. And there's no shame in that. It's part of, again, because the game is designed with this with a series of puzzles, some of which you're going to see quickly and you're going to solve fairly quickly. And some of them may be really difficult and may take a while. And there are some groups, because everybody's mind works differently. We all see things through, we all have this different vision of how we look at a space. And sometimes your group just may not have a person to see that particular puzzle. Mm-hmm. So we just tell all the groups, like, look, if you go more than 10 minutes without accomplishing anything, that would be a good time to ask for help. But some people are just like, no, we don't want to ask for help. We want to be in the 4%. It's like, well, right. That's how you know you're not in the 4%, because the groups who can do it without any help don't ever go more than 10 minutes without accomplishing something.
Yeah.
So to that end, I would say probably around 12, that's a group of kids who could reasonably, with help, figure out their way through the room. And then obviously there's no high end on the ages, but we do have birthday parties of kids who are younger than that, and typically what happens is the parents are just there and helping, and so they'll read the hints with them, and then they'll kind of help. If the parent figured it out from the hint, then they kind of help to bolster the kid's puzzle solving capabilities a little bit.
Yep. Found this book in the corner. Might be of some importance.
You should look at this. It's been sitting there for a long time.
I don't think the book was just there for no reason, as you say. So, Dawson, you're observing the whole time, or someone is mm-hmm. watching the team the whole time, like on a camera, to make sure they're not breaking stuff or
where they are in the game to give them the right hints.
Yeah. What's mm-hmm. some of the crazier or like sillier things you've seen people doing as they're put in this stressful situation, maybe that they're not used to being in?
A lot of it has to do with just guessing. It's just trying things, which is just, it's just going to waste your time in a room. And we've had people who, there's one item in the tomb, for example, that you're supposed to take and place in a certain space. And once it's there, it'll sit there, but you can also rotate it. You don't need to rotate it, but matter of fact, there's even lines that show how it lines up with the wall, and you place it there. And it's like, okay, that's visually, that should be obvious that that's where it goes. And we have people sit and rotate it in space for like a fidget spinner for like 15 minutes. So it's doing the same thing over and over that never netted you any results. It's just guessing and doing things. There are people who will take one item in the tomb and just rub it on the walls, like they're thinking it's gonna magically do something on some wall, but they don't know where or why or when. In the tomb, the floor is obviously covered with sand, and we've had people sit and, go through every inch of the corner, the edge of the room, looking in the sand. It's like, and, from our perspective, we're looking at it going, okay, let's assume that there was something under the sand in there somewhere. Are you going to move every grain of sand in that whole giant tomb looking for the thing, or you just want to look on the edges, or understand what you're doing? So that's some of the craziest stuff people have done has been they wound up breaking things. And then we're looking at it going, because we don't anticipate people to do something that huge in the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's often fast.
Yeah.
We've had people tear doors off of walls. We've had people push holes through the walls. And you know, that's a common rule in escape rooms is anytime you go in, nothing in the room ever requires more than the strength of one finger. And that's not just us. That's pretty much escape rooms everywhere. They're not giving you feats of strength that you have to overcome. Right. So those things are pretty, those are kind of like, we just sit in the back and our eyes get wide and we're like, well, okay, there's a thing that just happened.
Yeah,
we should probably go fix that.
So if they find a pickaxe in the tomb, do not assume the pickaxe is made.
If you find a pickaxe in the tomb, I assure you it's foam and you can use it to your heart's content.
It's for pictures when you're
yes.
assumingly out of the escape room. Well, what is the energy like when you see people coming in and out? I'm sure you see all kinds of people, people that are stressed, maybe people that don't know what they're getting into, professional escape room people. Like, what's the energy like when they exit, especially?
Well, if they're professional escape room players and bloggers, then I'm the one who's nervous because I just want to, you know, and that never stops. We've had so many of them. We just had a group called... I think it was Escape the Rumors, some people from that group who came through. And I asked him when they were in the lobby and they told us what group they were with. I was like, so how many rooms have you done? And he like pointed at our doors. He said, the tomb would be number 427 and Noir would be 428. And I was like, okay. and those people do really well, but we've had so many of them, like this guy went through, played the room and he came out and he said, I was pleasantly surprised because I saw a puzzle in your tomb room that I've never seen before. And I was surprised at which one he said it was. I was like, really? Okay, cool. I mean, that's, I love that we can surprise somebody who's seen that many rooms. That's pretty crazy. But the average group, we have a lot of couples who will go through and they'll come out and joke. It's like, this is a real relationship test. Like, you can find out how divorce resistant your marriage is by doing this. And they're always joking because, you know, we've never had anybody, you know, get into like a tiff about it. Most people come out, like the stress relieves as soon as the game is over. You know, it's like the pressure lifts. And if you didn't quite make it, then usually if we have time, if there's not another group or if we have some extra time before the next group, we go ahead and show you the end. So you got to see that and you get that kind of release of, okay, that's where it was going. And we were super close, which is a really nice feeling to get to see the end of it. But most people who come out are, you know, we have achievements in the room. Like even if you didn't beat the room, you may still have gotten a couple of achievements and you get your group photo at the end. So you look at that, it's like, here's the picture. And then underneath that, there's some achievements that we earned and they just sit in the lobby and they'll share those. And that's always, it's a fun thing for me to sit back and watch that people really enjoy the space, win or lose. They got the picture so they see, you know, their whole group together. It's like, here's a thing we did, whether it was friends or coworkers or family, and we had a good time. And we got some achievements in this one right here. That was me. I did that.
Okay, well, it is time for us to take a short break. I'm speaking today with Dawson McKay. He runs the Escape Alaska escape rooms here in Anchorage. And when we return, you're not going to want to miss this. We'll be taking you, the listener, into an audio escape room that we've cooked up. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're trapping ourselves, locking the doors, and plunging into the world of escape rooms. With me in the studio is Dawson McKay. He's the founder of Escape Alaska, which is an escape room company here in Anchorage. And right now, we have a special treat for our listeners, and hopefully for you, Dawson. We're going to open the doors right now to our very first audio escape room. Ammon, we need some doors opening. Okay, so this is how it's going to work. Our listeners and Dawson are going to enter an audio escape room. In that room, you'll be given a series of three different questions. For each question, we'll give you 30 seconds to come up with an answer. If you get it right in those 30 seconds, then great, you've gotten it right. And if you don't, that's okay, because you'll be given one hint, as you do in an escape room, right? Sure. When you need help. And then another 30 seconds to answer. So you'll get a full minute to answer.
All right.
with one hint. If you get an answer wrong, don't worry, you'll still have a chance to escape, and this is how we'll do it. So here's how you're going to make it out of our audio escape room. You're going to need 5 points, 5 points or more to escape, and here's how you get the points. If you get an answer correct without any hints at all, no hints, that's 3 points. If you get an answer correct using the hint, you get 1 point. And obviously, if you get an answer wrong, that is 0 points. So once again, you get the answer right, no help, that's 3 points. You get the answer right with the hint, that's 1 point. And get it wrong, it's zero, and you need 5 points to escape, all right?
Okay.
Okay, it's a life or death thing, so I want to make sure everyone understands the severity we're talking about.
It's very creepy in here, by the way.
Okay, so Dawson, if you do know the answer right away, that's okay, but don't answer it right away, because we're going to need we want to give our listeners the full amount of time to answer the question. Okay, so here we go. You are a produce farmer working out in Palmer, Alaska. One summer evening, as the sun begins to set finally, you're wrapping up for the day when you notice something in the twilight sky. At first, you assume it's a small airplane, likely one of 1,000 Cessnas you've seen over the farm. But as the object gets bigger, you can start to tell it's not a plane. Its movements are unconventional and eerily quick. A sickening feeling hits you in your stomach as the flying object comes into view, revealing its true shape, an alien spacecraft. You try to run, but in an instant your body locks up and you are dragged backward and upward at the same time. You are pulled into an open hatch, and once the doors close, you're met by a pale, skinny, towering alien. It speaks these words to you.
Greetings, Earthling. I'd like to congratulate you for having the honor of being selected by us. We wish to begin communications with your race and seek a human ambassador to serve as a liaison between our two species. But first, we must make sure you are worthy, and thus we'll administer a test of your intelligence. If you pass, you will be considered for employment. If you should fail, we will turn you into biofuel for our ship. Now, I understand humans enjoy riddles, so I will give you 3 to answer. First, what kind of room has no doors and no windows?
I feel like I should know this.
You've got plenty of time. What type of room has no doors and no windows?
All right, give me a hint.
The hint is, this answer should be easy if you're a real fun guy.
Oh, man.
This answer should be easy if you're a real fun guy.
Oh, if you're a real fun guy. Oh, a mushroom.
There you go. Okay. Got it. All right. All right. Well done, Dawson. You are still in it. You have 1 point.
Here is your next question. What has a head, a tail, is brown, but has no legs?
What has a head, a tail, is brown, but has no legs? Okay, Dawson did get it right. He told me off mic. But we're going to give the hint to our listeners now if they need the hint on this one. You'll need at least your 2 cents to answer this. You'll need at least your 2 cents to answer this. All right, Dawson, what was the answer you gave me earlier?
A penny?
That's right, a penny. So Dawson, if my math is correct, and I hope it is, you are at 4 points right now.
Yeah.
So you only need one more point to survive.
Okay.
Alaska Public Media's escape room.
Over the top if I nail it without a hint, but I can still make it out if I use a hint.
Yes.
That gets me at 5 points.
Even if you use a hint, yes.
Okay.
And you'll be at the top of our leaderboard with no hints.
Sweet.
How about that? All right.
Okay.
Okay, last question.
What is always in front of you, but cannot be seen?
No, I don't know.
What is always in front of you, but cannot be seen?
Is it your eyes? I mean, they're at the front of my person.
The front of
your face.
They're
not in front of me, though, no. All right, I need a hint.
Okay, here's your hint. Time is all you need to answer this riddle. Time is all you need to answer this riddle.
What is always in front of you, but can't be seen?
Mm-hmm.
The future.
Nailed it.
I'd like to thank Marty McFly and Doc Brown for that.
Yeah, it's going to get a round of applause here for Dawson. You have survived.
Thank you.
Alaska Public Media's very
first. It would have been so humiliating and embarrassing if the escape room guy didn't escape.
Escape room. All right. Well done, Dawson. I hope our listeners did as well as you. Before we let you go, I just have a few more questions mm-hmm. for you. I want to hear about this new room you're working on. You said we established you have the two escape rooms. You have the tomb mm-hmm. and noir. But you're working on a new one right now. What can you tell us about it, and when can people expect to actually escape it?
It's called Coven, and it's our first. I mentioned earlier that I began by working on a haunted house, and Coven is kind of haunted house adjacent, except for it's different because it's not a walkthrough event, because like in a haunted house, you just walk through and you see things. And occasionally there are jump scares. Not that there won't be any of those things in Coven, but Coven is like the premise is it's a small sacrificial cabin in the woods where a particular coven of witches has captured you, and they intend to sacrifice you. You'll never guess how long you have before they sacrifice you. And so over the course of an hour, it's going to be a lot more intense. There's going to be like an ongoing, like lingering dread. It's probably going to be scarier than the average haunted house, because in a haunted house, you know, you're just walking through and you're nearing the end. But in this space, you're in there for like an hour, and it's going to be intense. We're excited about it because also just aesthetically, it's probably going to be our most beautiful room. The inside of this cabin is scenic, is what we love to do the most. So creating the set and the feel of a space like that is what we really enjoy. It should be out by summer of next year.
Perfect. And speaking of Halloween stuff, you said you're working on the haunted house. Any ETA on that?
It's in the pipeline. There's actually another attraction that we're developing probably before that, just because there's so many things that we want to do, and we're a small family-owned business. You know, we have people come through all the time who look at our space, and we take it as a compliment, but they ask us if it's like, are you guys a franchise? You just buy these these kits or whatever? It's like, no, my son and I develop them. We build the rooms, and we do have help building the props, because we just don't have the shop for doing all the electronics and the fabrication on some of these things. But because of that, and the fact that we're, you know, we're entirely self-funded, you know, we just take the revenue from the rooms and we put it back into the next thing. It takes a little longer to get there, but when we get there, hopefully it's a thing that we're proud of. So we are working on a couple of different attractions, and the haunted house is definitely one that's in the pipeline, but there's some exciting stuff coming.
It sounds like it's spooky stuff. I like it. Well, Dawson, I read this one last thing in your bio that really stuck out to me. You mentioned that the escape room brings out, I want to say you said it was the five-year-old in all of us. So what is it about these rooms that you think captures our sense of wonder and makes us feel like a kid again?
I think allowing people to believe again, putting them into a space, and that's one of the things that I've always appreciated about like deep immersion. If like in noir, you know, well, in the tomb also, it's like floor to ceiling, not just the walls, it's the whole space. It's the music that goes along with it. It's the lighting effects. It's everything that puts you into a story. I think it's one of the few outlets that adults can find themselves in where they start to feel that feeling of wonder like you did when you were a kid. When you were five, everything was new and everything was big. And it was a lot easier to be amazed and awe. And we all, I think, just kind of naturally become, I don't want to say cynical, but you just become a little used to everything as you get older. And so escape rooms, it's one of the only places where you can actually go into a story and you find yourself standing in this magical, amazing space, and you get like a little twinge of that feeling you haven't felt for a very long time, where you get to just appreciate it and be in awe like a five-year-old, which is awesome. It's a great feeling.
Agreed. Well, I want to thank my guest, Dawson McKay. He's the founder of Escape Alaska, a series of escape rooms here in Anchorage. Dawson, thanks for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I appreciated your escape room. That was a good time.
Yes, thank you for braving it for everyone else that's going to do it next time. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Anyone devoted to creative endeavors can attest to the experience of doubt, isolation, and self-flagellation that can come along with the pursuit of self-expression. But that isn't always the case. Eagle River's Heather Steffi found a sense of purpose, community, and accomplishment through her art that helped her navigate physical and mental health challenges. Her work is typically vibrant and expressive land or seascapes and celestial night or day scenes, all featuring the interaction of light and darkness. She says since finding her passion and submitting to exhibitions, her life has become devoted to her art.
Well, lately, pastels have been taking up pretty much most of my time. And then the admin side of it, just all the websites, and recently had to get a business license.
The non-fun art stuff.
Right. So for the past, I'd say, 7 or 8 months, that's been my life. Or maybe watching YouTube videos on art history, color theory, just trying to teach myself different things.
Are you a self-taught artist, or did you, you know, were you one of those kids who was doodling all the time and mom and dad were just like, here's some art stuff, I'm going to put you in the corner, or was it something that came later to you?
Kind of both. I always loved arts and crafts as a kid, but I was never seriously into it. It was a hobby. I took drawing in college and didn't do very well in that class. So after that, I didn't really use art for a while, and then I got back into it with an art box that in a subscription box that came every month.
Yeah, and kind of your own personal path into art too, I'm assuming.
Yes.
It wasn't like, okay, everybody, we're going to sit here, we're going to draw a sphere, here's how you're going to do this. And it was kind of, I mean, do you enjoy that kind of self-directed learning? Like, or do you like having your hand held, or what did you think about that?
I enjoy the self-directed learning more. I don't know if I'd call myself a rule breaker, but I guess I challenge like how you're supposed to learn. I did that in college and in school too. You know, they said don't procrastinate. I was always the procrastinator, but I did well anyway.
Yeah, pushing the boundaries.
I guess you could put it that way.
Yeah, so let's talk pastels. They've been dominating your life. What is it about them that you gravitate towards?
Mainly the vibrant colors. I would say that was what drew me to them in the first place. And also the texture. I really like the sensory feel of it.
As it kind of smears across and stuff like that or something? Or like
the sounds are kind of soothing, and so are the motions, and they're always there ready to be used with the vibrant pigments. You don't have to mix any paint.
Like, oh no, I left them out. They're all dried out. I gotta throw them away.
And they last for a really long time. You don't have to replace them if you haven't used them for a little while.
When you're using pastels, what are you putting them on? Canvas? What types of material?
There's different kind of papers. They don't really work well on regular paper that you would write on. You have to get sanded paper usually works best.
Textured?
Textured. The ones that I use are usually sanded or kind of like a velvet texture.
Okay.
They're really interesting, but the paper matters a lot.
Well, you did mention that there is a cool society that some people might not know about that kind of welcomed you in and maybe kind of helped you on this journey to being obsessed with pastels.
Yes, I joined them earlier this year when I found out about them in January. They're called the Pastel Society of Alaska, and they're a very nice group of people. They're very welcoming. They have workshops, society-specific shows, if you're a member. Those are pretty fun. And so far, they've taught me a lot and just been very welcoming. And the way I found out about that was actually pretty interesting, too. I was learning from another pastel artist who's in Florida, posted a picture from when we had that nice Aurora show. And somebody else was also in that group from Eagle River and found me, and she was in the Pastel Society. So it was interesting how it happened.
Yeah. I mean, do you find it's maybe a little easier to keep going with it kind of more long term because you have, like, you know, this other group of people that you can kind of talk to and bounce ideas off and learn from?
Definitely. I feel like I still have a lot to learn, and there are definitely more talented artists than me in the society, and I want to learn as much as I can. It also, it gets me out of the house. There's more social aspect to it. Mutual interests and very supportive community.
Let's talk about your actual art. Okay. So you feature lots of, like, landscapes, seascapes, a lot kind of inspired by Alaska, and then I believe night and daytime celestial scenes. You're not just like northern lights and night skies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these do have really vibrant colors, kind of like you were talking about with the pastels. But could you maybe just kind of discuss your inspiration for, you know, these specific types of art?
Well, there's a combination of things that draws me to them. I don't know if you noticed when you were looking, a lot of them have to do with light, different types of light. That's kind of symbolic for me when I'm doing my art. Some kind of darkness and some kind of light breaking through, kind of like a hopeful feeling is what I'm hoping to get from the viewer.
Yeah.
And also the landscapes in Alaska are very much an inspiration. I try to take my own photos, mostly down by the Eagle River Nature Center. And
it's hard not to be inspired by Alaska.
It is.
I guess, you know, you talked about how, you know, you want to maybe kind of inspire some positivity and maybe kind of focus on the light rather than the darkness, I'm assuming, in your work.
Mm.
But it's like way more expressive than focused on realism. And I think that's probably why you're trying to, you know, give like a an optimistic feel to your paintings. But I guess, you know, why does that kind of more expressive rather than like realistic style appeal to you?
Well, I tried at first to do more impressionistic work and more realistic work, and at first I just had a really hard time doing it, and I decided if I couldn't do it, I might as well lean into what I could do, and that is what I enjoyed more anyway, so I just leaned into it, the vibrant colors, the expressive landscapes, and I just enjoy seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a hybrid, right? Because it's like kind of impressionistic, but it's still like very obvious what's going on with the lines and the shapes and stuff like that, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, kind of, I mean, I guess relating to, you know, darkness and light, light breaking through the dark. You've talked publicly in the past about your personal struggles and how art has helped you. Would you mind just kind of sharing, as much as you're willing to, kind of what struggles art helped or maybe is helping you to overcome?
Well, I have some physical health struggles and some mental health struggles. They started about, I'd say, 8 years ago, and that is around the same time that I started getting the art hobby box, and I realized that it took my mind off of a lot of the things that I was going through. I really ended up enjoying it and leaned into it more and more over the years, and until especially this last year, I just poured myself into it.
What would you say maybe some of the personal benefits that you've gotten from doing art have been?
I feel like I'm doing something worthwhile, that I'm contributing something. People seem to enjoy it. I've been told that they enjoy it. So if somebody can look at it and enjoy what I'm doing, then that makes it worthwhile to me. It also helps me get out of my own head sometimes. It can be very relaxing, especially when I'm doing waterscapes and clouds and stuff. That's why I like to paint a lot of water. They're very soothing to me.
Yeah, I could definitely see you kind of... Do you kind of put yourself in that headspace when you are, you know, painting this kind of like ethereal, like ocean sky or something like that? Are you like, yes, I am here on this beautiful beach on this water?
That's what I'm trying to do, yes.
Well, it puts me there for sure. Okay, well, let's maybe talk about, you know, you said you wanted to share your story just because, you know, other people might benefit and stuff like that too. And, you know, what ways do you think art can help other people that are struggling, or what advice would you have for other people that are struggling?
If you've ever had an interest that you weren't sure about, try it is probably the simplest thing that I would share. It took me a really long time to find something that I really enjoyed, that I found worthwhile.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, it's like, by the sounds of it, yeah, it's something productive, something that keeps you busy, something you can be proud of. It sounds like you've been getting the social aspect to it, maybe breaking out of your own shell and trying new things. Yeah, all good stuff for people, I think, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you've got some stuff coming up, but we're kind of in limbo at the moment. Do you want to talk about kind of what you've got going on and maybe what you've been up to recently?
Sure. I have a couple exhibitions that I'm waiting on results from. Two of them I should know the results of in the next week, but the rest are further later this fall. If I'm accepted, that'll be the sixth one that I've been accepted to this year, so I'm pretty excited about that. One of the ones I was accepted to, I got a special merit award on one of my... Also excited about that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have taken any of these steps this year if it hadn't been for my past and joining the Pastel Society and just taking the very first step.
Yeah, I mean, your very first exhibition was this last year?
This year in February.
This year in February. I mean, what was it like to maybe have spent a ton of time, you know, probably in isolation, just like not really sure what other people would think or something like that? Like, what was it like to finally get out and be like, this is my work?
It was very exciting and kind of validating. The first one that I entered, I got a lot of outward feedback that it was really great. So I was like, well, let's see. Let's see if I can do anything with it. And I entered my first exhibition and I was a finalist and I was very excited. It was very validating.
Yeah, totally. Where can people find your work? I know that you're on a few different platforms and stuff. And yeah, where's the best way to find you? Maybe online.
I'm on Facebook. Instagram is probably my biggest presence. Also, Nextdoor is probably second biggest for local engagement. I'm on Etsy. I have a professional portfolio at ArtCall. And you can also just Google me and I show up.
Yeah, and that's just all going to be Heather Steffi.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I guess, you know, is there anything else that you'd want to add about, you know, your work, the benefits of art, anything like that?
I want to add that art can be very grounding. I just think that it's a very important thing. You know, it's been talked about less and less, it seems, lately with the rise of AI art and everything. But I think it's important for connection. I think it's important for your own personal growth. And I really do think that it helps a lot.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a great place to end it. Well, thank you so much for coming in, and yeah, good luck with everything you got coming up.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. That was Eagle River pastel artist Heather Steffi. We were discussing how art and community have helped her navigate physical and mental health challenges. We'll have links to her work on our webpage. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guest, Dawson McKay. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.